Okay, so what we'll do is if you have a question, say who you are and what work you do, and then we'll the conversation. Does anyone have something they want to throw out there or throw to the discussion? Okay. Is that better? Sounds better. Okay, so what we'll do is raise your hand if you're interested in asking a question or throwing something out for discussion. Just say who you are, where you're from, or who you work with, and we'll continue the conversation. Does anyone want to start? There are a lot of not shy people in this room, so someone I know. Are we shy? All right.
You know, sometimes farmers come to a place where it's time, no more time for talking, it's time for plowing. And it sounds like maybe they want to do some plowing, you know, it's time to go to work. So, are there any, I just want not to be rude, if there are any, even criticisms, because I think we grow when we have conversation together. All right. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Rhonda Perry. I'm a farmer from Missouri, and we've got a whole crew of farmers here today. We're so glad to be here. That's one of the most impressive things that I think a lot of us have seen going on in a long time in North Carolina. We talk about you frequently. We're organizing this same kind of base in Missouri, and we think it's absolutely fabulous. And I don't think that any of us from the Missouri contingency can offer anything but great hope for your work here and our work in Missouri. And I assume you all are passing Medicaid expansion this year, and we are passing Medicaid expansion this year. We are confident. I did have one question that I just didn't get written down, and I thought this was really important. You had four things you were calling for that are historically accurate and three things that I did not get. And if you wouldn't mind laying those four things out to us again, I think that would be really helpful for us to carry forward our work in places like Missouri. And thank you so much for sharing the work you're doing here with the work that we're all doing in our states. Thank you.
One of the things, thank you so much, we are not passing Medicaid expansion. We are fighting for it because, as I said, our legislature denied it. The very guy that's running for the Senate, Tom Tillis, who wants to be United States Senator now, has actually been against Medicaid expansion and has said that raising the minimum wage is a dangerous idea. And so we are challenging that. We're actually looking at, some of our lawyers are looking at the possibility of some civil suits, because we actually can point to people now who are going to die this year. In fact, there was a young lady, Crystal Price, who sat in our speaker's office for 12 hours before she was arrested with 15 other people. She has three children. She works in fast food. She has cervical cancer. And because she works in first sum, she can't afford, quote unquote, the paid part of the Affordable Care Act. And because of Medicaid expansion is denied, she can't receive it. She met Bob in Washington, D.C., and she has committed to say if she's got to die, she's going to leave a witness to her children of fighting for what's right. And she has said she's going to be out here, and has said to us if she dies, she hopes that our legal team will find a way to sue those who have literally caused her death by a political act. You know, and that's morbid, but that's how real it's getting. And we can point to person after person that's doing that. In languaging, you know, there's a book called The Theology of Race, I think it is, by a guy at Duke. Can't call his last name, it'll come to him in minutes. But he has a whole chapter on how language is either a tool of deliverance or a tool of oppression, a tool of liberty or a tool of domination. So one of the things we have learned in this movement is that if you don't start with the right language, you can't build the right movement. So that's why we say what we need is an indigenously led, deeply moral, deeply constitutional, anti-racist, anti-poverty, pro-justice, state-based, state government-focused, transformative fusion coalition. Now you say that's a lot, but we say you got to have your language right because your language focuses you. And each piece of that language means something. Deeply moral, deeply constitutional, transformative, indigenously led. You know, some people got mad with us because when we started with the moral movement 8 years ago, some folk who, and I'm saying this careful, who, you know, some people think they're national leaders because they got a P.O. box in Washington, D.C. And so when we got the stage built, they wanted to come jump on the stage, and we said no. So we got called being arrogant, and it wasn't about being arrogant. It was we recognized that the people here had to jail because they're going to be here. And our argument is that we need to build these movements throughout the South. You know, people always talk about the March in Washington. I wasn't there because I was in my mother's womb, and I said, the joke in my family is that I said, I'm going to wait till after y'all march, and then I will come. Because my mother went into labor on the 28th, but then I said, hold up a minute. but when you study it, people forget there were people in jail in 200 cities. And people, you know, sometimes people get caught up in the hoop of a preacher and miss the substance. Dr. King actually gave us the strategy. And then Charles and David Koch stole our prophet strategy. He said, go back to Alabama. Go back to Georgia. There's an article in Time a few weeks ago that says the far right, Charles Koch did a speech in 74, Charles Koch, the son of Freddie Koch, and he outlined a state strategy. While at the same time, progressives went from building a movement to backing Messiah candidates. And the problem with that is not that you shouldn't be politically active, but if you build your movement totally around a candidate, if the candidate wins, the infrastructure goes, because then you turn it all over to the candidate. If the candidate loses, the infrastructure goes. Charles Koch said, if we build a movement, we'll produce candidates. They read our stuff, you know, and I read their stuff. I've learned. Some of our movement is built around Jesse Hammond. I know y'all going to kill me for saying that. And I think there may be a report in here, but that's all right. Jesse Ham told me one time, I went to his office about something, and he said, y'all come on in here, have some of these cookies and tea. I was up there with a bunch of clergy. And he said, I'm not going to vote for what y'all want, but you're welcome in my office because I'm your senator. I said, this man is, so I asked him, I'm just crazy. I said, Senator Ham, why you talk like that? He says, well, son, I don't need but 51%. That's what he said. And you know, I thought about that and I said, you know, a broke clock can be right twice a day. It is. And what he was essence saying, if I build a coalition that can get me to 51%, I win. Now, I don't mean, I'm not one to believe you leave out the other 40, but my point is that the extremists learned something. David Koch and Charles Koch said, let's go to the states. Let's take over state capitals. We can determine who's in the Congress. We determine who's in the Congress. We can stop any president. In fact, we'll give you a president. We can stop any president by doing so. We've got to, and every transformative movement in this country started from Montgomery up, from Birmingham up, from Greensboro up. It didn't start from here down. So that's the first point. Second is the language framing is this. We believe we have to critique public policy and point out where that policy is constitutionally inconsistent, morally indefensible, historically inaccurate, and economically insane. Those four, and that allows people who may not be with you in a political party room to come in. See, that's why I don't call our state legislators Republicans. I just refuse to do that. What we do instead is point out that they are not Republicans by lifting up Teddy Roosevelt and Eisenhower's letter to his brother and Jackie Robinson's stance for civil rights and Benjamin Hooks and my granddaddy and Lincoln. And then what we say is they then represent extremism. We point out the fact that when the legislators here cut earned income tax credit, they made Ronald Reagan look like a liberal. So rather than just calling them, you're a Republican, we reverse it and try to use it against them and say, listen, Ronald Reagan supported earned income tax credit. So now if you can't even support earned income tax credit and you make Ronald Reagan look like a liberal, you are very extreme. And that's what allows us to talk to some people who otherwise wouldn't be with us. Not making any sense? And then the five areas there are five areas, there's detail in there. In fact, hold on. But five areas that we believe connect us. And one of the things we argue is, I'm about tired, I told the NAACP this too, Cheryl, of going every year to an NAACP conference to figure out the agenda. I'm about sick of them blue, green, and yellow dots. You all know, you go to the meeting, and you sit there, and every year you figure out the same agenda. And nobody ever talks about a movement to get the agenda done. So I'm saying, aren't we at a point yet we can agree on some basic things? So we said there are five areas. Number one, pro-labor, anti-poverty policies that create sustainability. I'll send this to you. By fighting for employment, living wages, the alleviation of disparate unemployment, a green economy, labor rights, affordable housing, targeted empowerment zones, especially in rural and farming communities, strong safety net services for the poor, fair policies for immigrant infrastructure development, and fair tax reform. Number two, educational equality by ensuring every child receives a high-quality, well-funded, constitutional, diverse public education. Number three, health care for all by ensuring access to the Affordable Care Act as it is, growing it, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and environmental protection. Number four, fairness in the criminal justice system by addressing the continuing inequalities in the system against black, brown, and poor white people. Number five, protecting and expanding voting rights, women's rights, LGBT rights, immigrants' rights, and the fundamental principle of equal protection under law. What I say to folks is, can't we agree on that dream? Now, we can work out the specific policies, but can't we at least coalesce around those five things and critique public policy based on whether they come up to those values or beneath those values? And have a discussion that's not so much about, as I said, left, right, and Republican, Democrat, but it's about right and wrong. And I think the public is so... a lot of these are stories. I'm in Iredell County. You know where Iredell is, Cheryl? Iredell County. It's up the Statesville. That's where they were so ruthless that when the Freedom Riders went through there, they poured acid. Another one of those places. You know, we talk about how it happened in Florida, but it's happened in Statesville, too. They poured battery acid on some Freedom Riders up there back in '60. But anyway, Iredell County is another one of those counties. I'll tell you a story that happened. So we went up to have a Moral Monday. And in fact, we've had 75 now since last April. We've had 125 action, 75 straight Mondays. Just left my friends from Cleveland County, where they made us have the rally facing the Confederate statue that said, lest we forget. But 300-400 black and white people showed up this past Monday in the town where Thomas Dixon is from, who wrote The Klansman, that was the script of the movie Birth of a Nation. And yet, we saw America in its finest, didn't we, on Monday night. I went to Iredell County, and I was up speaking on stage about these issues, had just heard a black Democrat and a white Republican who are union leaders stand up there together against our administration using this moral language. So I was speaking, and in the middle of my speech, I don't never have this happen in the black church, this white lady who's standing on stage with me said, Reverend, I got something to say, and reached for the mic. Now, that's kind of unusual, but the cameras were on. I couldn't tell her no. And then as she was reaching, she said, and I'm a Republican. I said, boy, they done set me up here. They gonna think, what can I do? You know, older white woman, Republican, reach for the mic. So I'm thinking, what in the world is this lady going to say? She says, Reverend Barbara, she says, I'm a nine-generation Republican, and I'm sick of these Republicans. I said, turn the mic up. She said, you're exactly right. These folk ain't Republican. My granddaddy was a Republican. My granddaddy used to stand at the voting place to make sure black people got their right and back up the red shirts, and I'm sick of them. She said, they're just wrong. They said, she said, I went to jail with you, Reverend Bob, because I don't know half the people, 1,000 of them, I don't know. I said, you did? She said, I sure did, and when you want me to go back? She said, because I can go every day, I'm retired, because I'm sick of them. She said, and we organizing up here too. And then she said, and another thing, she said, if they ever criticize you again about y'all just want welfare, you come get me. I'm welfare queen number one. I want all my Social Security. I want everything. Now you got to imagine the news stations are freaking out because they're like, they ain't seen nothing like this. And it's a stage of black and white, and now this woman is taking over. And then she said, now you can finish. And in Iredell County, now imagine, the Republican governor is right inside meeting with the Chamber of Commerce. But using this new model, and I'm not euphoric about it, I know it's got problems, but in that moment, now something else happened that night. I'm standing on stage finishing my sermon after she interrupted it, and all of a sudden, Gary, the people on stage moved close, like real close to me. And I'm like, what? You know, I need some, you know, because I need to, when I speak, I got to, you know, but they're close. So after I finish, my security guy says, get off stage, there's somebody up there with a gun. I said, what? He said, just move, Reverend Barbara. So we move, and they move me to the car, and they get me in the car. And later on, I found out that the FBI or somebody had put a plain clothes guy with a sniper rifle, but didn't tell us. But here's the thing, because the governor was there, and I guess, the fact that those black and white people didn't move, they heard security saying it's a gun, and instead of moving, and they never met me before, in Iredell County, they came closer, and in essence said, in order to get to him, you got to get to us. It's possible. And we've done some other things. We left the movement because we wanted to make sure it wasn't just about one leader. And folks said, Reverend Barbara, tomorrow, Monday, you're not going to be there? I said, no, I'm not going to be there. They said, what's going to happen? I said, what's going to happen is our movement has depth. It has depth. And we believe, as you said, that this kind of, but it ain't normal coalition, but this kind of fusion can happen all over the South. In fact, it must happen, I believe. It must happen. That's too long of a line. I'm sorry if that's too, yeah. So I'm going to put this mic up because, anybody? Well, Shirley, you got to tell me when to sit down now. Okay.
Let me just tell you how much I enjoyed your speech, and I wanted to ask you if the lawsuit you have going on against the voter suppression, is it going to take effect before this election, or how is that going to work?
The voter suppression?
Or the lawsuit you have to stop those laws.
Right. Well, we go back, Al, when is it? The Fourth Circuit, September 25th in Charlotte, the Fourth Circuit is now taking up the ruling of the judge in the Middle District. We believe his ruling was bad. It was bad law, bad ruling. And we're hoping that the Fourth Circuit will, in fact, give us an injunction. We're operating in two places. We're acting as though they may not, and we're dreaming and hoping that they will. And what we're doing now, we had 47 young people, 40 young people in 47 counties this summer doing Moral Freedom Summer, modeling it after Freedom Summer, registering voters. We have all of our chapters and coalition people engaged in voter registration. They know exactly what they're doing because North Carolina had the highest turnout, increase in turnout, the fourth highest increase in turnout of voting in the last few presidential elections. So the extremists in this community know that if the vote is high, they can't survive. Now, there's one narrative, though, that we're trying to defeat. And I say even to my progressive friends, don't do racism light. And I don't like it, and I see it where they keep blaming how this election goes on black people. You know, the black vote turnout. The fact is, North Carolina is 3-1 Democrat. So you're not gonna hang that on black people. Now, black people ought to turn out, and surely 400,000 of us that voted in 2008, 2012 shouldn't sit out in 2014 like we did in 2010. But elections in North Carolina, whether they go Democrat or Republican, are not because that's what black people do. It's about party switching. Remember, Jesse Ham survived in this state for years, not because people switched party. That's what happened. And that's, again, our movement. Our movement has criticized even Democrats. In fact, the Forward Together movement started when Democrats went off. Don't ever forget that. It started 2006. We had to battle Democrats to get same-day registration early voting. We had to battle Democrats to get a minimum wage. It took 10 years with Democrats in office to get this state to raise a minimum wage. 10 years. Even though the Republicans have taken us to 49th in the nation, even with Democrats in the office, we were at 46th in public education, and we had to sue Democrats under state law in order to win the Leandro case to make Democrats put more money in rural schools where farmers are. So that's why we believe there has to be a moral movement. You know, folk always say, well, Rabbi, when are you running for governor? Not. That, you know, we need to do similar to what the far right did. We need to be a movement and let the movement produce folk, but everybody can't go inside the belly of the beast because the belly will contaminate you. It has its own acids. It's designed the belly is designed to dissolve you. I mean, it is. If you eat anything, it has certain kind of intestinal fluid. So somebody has to be able to operate on the belly, you know, and that's an important role. The problem is we sometimes have made voting the end all of everything. Like people say, well, Reverend Barber, if the Far Together movement doesn't win this fall, what good was what you did? Are you crazy? They didn't win. You know, in the 60s, they didn't change all the people who were elected. They changed the context in which elected folk had to operate. We went, last year when we started, the governor was at 50%, now he's at 30% and falling. The legislature was at 40%, now they're at 17. When we started, 40%, I think, of North Carolina, or maybe a little bit more than that, believed in Medicaid expansion. After we shifted the conversation, now 58% of North Carolina believe in Medicaid expansion. So there has to be a movement that changes the consciousness. It's not just about the election, but it's about the kind of decisions people elect to make based on the information they have and the awakening that they have, I think.
I want to take a chance here, but I don't think it's a chance at all. First of all, we're extremely, extremely grateful for your, not just your presence, but for your leadership. But if I heard you right, what you're saying is that our job is that everybody has to be a leader. And if there's anything we have to do here today, it's build up and be strong. And I want you just to turn around with your back to the audience, and I want you to know that everybody is going to stand behind you, and they're going to move forward. So everybody stand up, and we are the same as those people that had come together to protect you that night.
Thank you so much. While you're standing, this has nothing to do, well, y'all don't know how much that means, because tomorrow Al and I have got to go to Bladenboro, where we have had the allegation of a 17-year-old being hung. A 17-year-old African-American boy was hung in Bladenboro, North Carolina. And the allegation right now is that because he was in an interracial situation. We don't have all of the facts. If it's true, it's sad that you almost don't want it to be true that it's something else happened. If it's true, it may be bigger than Ferguson. And so prophetically, for you to do that means more than you know. And not for me. I wanted my son, because my son asked me the other day, he said, "Daddy, how do you keep from being angry?" Because he was in Florida, 10 miles from Sanford, when that happened. He just visited the death site of Mike with me in Ferguson. And he said, "Daddy, how do you keep?" This is how you happen, son. You find community of people who have still have a sense of that humanity. And they become your inspiration. They become your protection. But they also help you. They're like buoys. They're like life preservers in the midst of the troubling waters. And so I'm glad she didn't know. But in that moment, you were acting prophetically, because I hope that in what she just did, that they did to your father, you actually see in living, breathing color how it is that you save your life and keep your mind in this crazy world. You got to find a community that will embrace you through the good and through the bad. Amen. A blessing for the lunch. I'm going to bless with this scripture from Hebrews 10:39, and ask you to say it with me. Paul said it in the midst of troubling times. It is said that Dr. King said this to Edie Nixon when his house was burning down, and he looked at Dr. King and said, "What now?" I don't know if that story is true, but it's out there in the folklore. And it simply says this. Repeat after me. We are not of those who shrink back unto destruction, but we are those who persevere unto the saving of the soul. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. God bless us with the courage to hope. Amen.